Burleson, and welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go. Ahead on this Wednesday, June 17th, we have a very big show for you. Vice President J.D. Vance is here on the set for a one-on-one interview with Norah O'Donnell. They will talk about the deal with Iran, which is facing major questions on Capitol Hill. Norah also asks about the Epstein files and the vice president's new book. Plus, the online trend called tan maxing. Could it be putting people at risk? We will hear from a dermatologist about the dangers, including some you might not expect. Also, the champ is here. That's right. New York Knicks captain Jalen Brunson is here, along with his dad slash coach. And they will tell us what it took to win big. And singer Duran Bernard joins us to talk about his latest album and his powerful speech at the Grammys. All that and more ahead.
But we're going to begin with extremely dangerous weather. Heavy rain brought floods to parts of Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. We're talking as much as, listen to this, 3 inches in 1 hour. Ooh. Yikes. CBS News meteorologist Rob Marciano is tracking some of the new threats, including possible tornadoes in the Midwest. He's just outside St. Louis. Rob, what can you tell us? Good morning to you.
Busy weather day ahead, Gail, not just here, but as you pointed out, along the Gulf Coast as well. We already have a severe thunderstorm watch in effect just to our north through much of Iowa, and winds clocked to 94 miles an hour in some of those storms just northeast of Des Moines. So that's in effect until 11 o'clock this morning, and then we're going to reset the tables and really bring in the juice. Really strong jet dynamics for mid-June. It's kind of crazy, and then we're going to see the heat and humidity, and the sun can't get any stronger. So all those ingredients are going to spell for a level 4 out of 5 risk for seeing not just thunderstorms with tornadoes, but potentially long track destructive tornadoes across some of the areas that got hit last week, Peoria, eastern Illinois, and into Indiana. We do have a flood watch. It's in effect for parts of Chicago and lower Michigan. So there's some rain with this as well. Not nearly as heavy as the rain that's going to be across the Gulf Coast with this yet to be named tropical storm. So we'll be watching both of those on both fronts. A pretty day here, morning to start here in St. Louis, Gale. The arch is looking great, but we got some storms coming later on.
Oh, that's not the word anybody wants to hear today, Rob, but thank you so much. Let's throw it over to Norah, who's with the vice president. Norah?
All right. Thank you, Gail. We're going to turn now to major questions around the U.S. deal with Iran. As President Trump meets with world leaders at the G7 summit, there's a lot we don't know, including what happens if the deal falls apart. Well, this morning, the president said, quote, if I don't like it, we'll go right back to dropping bombs. Today, we'll try to get more details from the man with me here on set, Vice President J.D. Vance. He has been heavily involved in these talks, and he's also out with a new book, which we'll get to in a moment. It's called Communion, Finding My Way Back to Faith. Vice President Vance, good morning. So good to have you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's get right to the news of the day, that potential deal with Tehran. The president says he wants to put this war in the rearview mirror, and yet this framework remains silent. Why not allow the world to see whatever this deal is that you signed?
Yeah, so there are some, frankly, diplomatic protocols that I don't fully understand. The Qataris and the Pakistanis, who have been helpful in mediating this agreement with the Iranians, they've asked us not to release the full text for a little while. That it'll come out at the latest on Friday. We're actually trying to push them to get it out today because we want to tell the American people what's in this deal. It's fundamentally a good deal for the American people, but it's also very simple, and I've also seen some misrepresentations about it. So in short, what it does is it opens the Strait of Hormuz immediately. This is why you see oil prices down in the 70s from a high in the 120s, is because you're seeing the Strait already open its traffic to the flow of oil and gas. It also provides a framework whereby if the Iranians give us what we need on stopping the funding of terrorism, on no longer pursuing a nuclear weapon, then they can get some benefits, be reinvited into the world economy. And when I say benefits, I'm talking about sanctions relief on their economy. We've destroyed their nuclear program, but one of the things the president is trying to do is give them the incentive not to try to rebuild that program for the long haul so that it's not just us. We don't have to worry about Iran having a nuclear weapon for the next couple of years, but for the next generation, that generation doesn't have to worry about it either.
You understand why people want to see the details on this. And Americans, the economy, it's been hurting. I mean, gas prices up more than $1 since the start of this war with Iran. How quickly will those prices go down?
Well, I believe gas prices nationally got up to an average of about $4.50. They're already down right now about $4. When you see oil going from $120 to $75, that means the gas prices are going to come down a lot more over just the next few weeks. You know, we really do think, as the president said, this was a short-term increase in prices. We understand it caused a lot of disruption. There are a lot of American families who are struggling, but this is not a long-term change. And I think you're going to see those prices, frankly, they've already come back down a little bit. They're going to keep on coming down in the weeks and months to come.
Let's talk about this impact on America's national security. You've seen the details in this memorandum of understanding that still remains a secret, that both members, even of your party, are saying, wait, I don't know the details yet, so they're skeptical. So let me ask you this.
Yep.
Can you confirm that it is going to end all sanctions against Iran, that it will ensure reconstruction financing of at least $300 billion for Iran, and that it will release all frozen funds, which could be more than $100 billion. Given that amount of money flowing into Iran, how does that amount of money flowing into the chief exporter of terror make America safer?
So none of those things flow to Iran unless Iran fundamentally changes how it behaves with the world. If you look at the memorandum of understanding, and again, it's going to come out whether later today or on Friday, what it fundamentally says is Iran can have their economy with less sanctions on it, but only if they change the way that they interact with the world. So let me just give you a very concrete example. So let's say the United Arab Emirates, not a single penny of American money would flow to Iran. I want to be clear about that, even if the Iranians do everything that they're supposed to. But if the Emiratis, say, wanted to invest in a power plant in Iran, they actually can't invest in a power plant in Iran so long as Iran is under the current sanctions regime that the United States has. Now, we're not going to lift that sanctions regime unless Iran stops funding terrorism, unless Iran stops trying to rebuild their nuclear program. So what the president is really saying is, if Iran fundamentally transforms how it deals with the United States and the region, the rest of the world, then Iran can get some economic benefits. But I think what you've seen is people emphasizing the benefits that the Iranians get. But for them to get those benefits, they would have to change the kind of country that they are, which would be a major win for the American
people. You understand why people are still skeptical, including Republican senators and lawmakers. I mean, the Wall Street Journal editorial board, which has been supportive of this administration's efforts against Iran, said the world is more likely to see this as a strategic retreat. Have you won the war with Iran?
Yes, we have. And I think that's a mistake from the Wall Street Journal editorial board, because what does this deal fundamentally do? It ensures that Iran won't get a nuclear weapon, and it ensures the Straits of Hormuz are open. That's what the president wanted to accomplish. He wanted to ensure that Iran would not have a nuclear weapon, and this deal will accomplish precisely that. I do think there are people, Nora, who sometimes confuse the ends with the means. The president of the United States used diplomacy. He used economic leverage. He also used military leverage in order to ensure that Iran would have a nuclear weapon. That was the goal. I think there are some people who just want the bombing to continue, regardless of whether it accomplishes anything for Americans. That's not what the president is trying to do. He's not trying to cause misery for the people of Iran. He's trying to ensure that they don't have a nuclear weapon, and that's what we've done.
Mr. Vice President, I also want to ask you about the Epstein files.
Sure.
According to a new book by New York Times reporters, you were the leading voice in the administration to release the Epstein files. There are still more than 2.5 million files that have not been made public. The survivors want them made public. Can you commit right now that you will push to have them made public, even if they are duplicates or there's more redactions?
So we absolutely want to make those documents public. But there are a couple of things. First of all, we have to protect certain victims that can appear in those files. And the second thing, Nora, is some of those files, as I understand it, 2.5 million files is a lot. But some of those files, as I understand it, are actually things that are under court seal. So for us to release those files, we need the approval of certain jurisdictions, certain courts. We've actually applied to release files and had the courts say no. So we're going to comply with the law, but we absolutely are committed to full transparency here. But here's the thing, Nora, just about this story, to zoom out a little bit. There is this media narrative out there, I think driven by certain congressional Democrats, that Donald Trump, who the files show turned Epstein into the police, they say that Donald Trump somehow did something wrong with Jeffrey Epstein. That just isn't supported by the evidence. Donald Trump thought Epstein was a creep. Turns out he was right when so many others were wrong.
Well, what I hear is the concern that people say, other than Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, no one's been held accountable.
Yeah, and we want to hold more people accountable, absolutely. But you've got to follow the evidence in this case. In some cases, you have evidence of wrongdoing, but not something where you can actually prosecute somebody. In some cases, you have things that happened 20 years ago where the people who were involved, you know, either they won't speak to a prosecutor or you just don't have the evidence to bring a case, even if you think something might happen. So we absolutely want justice for everybody. I got to tell you, Nora, I've always been creeped out by this story because Jeffrey Epstein knew a lot of rich and powerful people and seemed to run in these circles while he was doing some very disgusting things with young girls. The story has always creeped me out, but we can't just prosecute people because we think something is wrong. You can only prosecute people if you've got the evidence to prove the wrongdoing.
Let's talk about your new book, Communion.
Sure.
It focuses on your evolution of faith,
yeah.
From an evangelical to an atheist to a Catholic. That's
sure.
quite an evolution.
It is.
And I know that you wrote in the book that even though you may not always agree with the leader of the Catholic Church, you learned something from them.
Sure.
So it has been a little bit more than a year since the election of Pope Leo,
yes.
our first American pope. He's been highly critical of your administration. What have you learned from Pope Leo?
Well, I think that Pope Leo is trying to balance a lot of competing factors. And for example, you say he's been critical of the administration, and he has been. He's also said, for example, that a nation is allowed to have secure borders. He said that newcomers to a nation have a duty to integrate. He's also encouraged the administration to treat migrants humanely. And I think that what Pope Leo is trying to do is encourage all of us, whether we're Republicans or Democrats, to strike the right balance between law enforcement and being charitable to others. We're trying to do that in the Trump administration. Sometimes we're not always going to agree with Pope Leo's criticisms, but what I take from the Pope as a Christian and as a Catholic is he's a very important moral voice. His goal fundamentally is to preach the gospel. And even if I don't agree with him, I try to listen, I try to understand, and I try to learn something from it.
Well, Mr. Vice President, thank you for joining us. Congrats on the book. And
thank you.
You are off overseas to sign this deal. You're the architect of the deal?
I was very involved in the negotiation, but it's been a whole administration effort, and everybody deserves credit for us getting to this place, which, again, this is good for Americans. Peace, the straits are open, gas prices coming down, Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. That's what we wanted to do.
We'll be watching. All right, Mr. Vice President,
thanks,
thank you again. We appreciate it. And Communion is on sale now. Nate, back to you.
The man who pleaded guilty to the so-called Gilgo Beach murders is due to be sentenced to life in prison today. Rex Uhrman admitted to killing 8 women over the course of nearly 2 decades on New York's Long Island, ending in 2010. He was arrested more than a decade later. Tom Hansen looks at the long investigation that may not be over.
You feel it's in your best interest to plead guilty rather than go to trial.
Yes, Your Honor.
That was Rex Uhrman in April, as he confessed to murdering 7 women and admitted in court to killing an 8th, then disposing of their bodies near Long Island's Gilgo Beach.
Rex, did you do it?
Uhrman was arrested in 2023, more than a decade after the search for one missing woman turned up numerous sets of human remains and raised concerns over a potential serial killer. Matching DNA from a discarded pizza crust ultimately helped investigators hone in on Uhrman, who initially pleaded not guilty before his surprise reversal in April. Victims' families are expected to offer impact statements in court today, the first time they'll be able to address Uhrman directly. Some spoke out previously after his guilty plea.
This moment is not the end, but a reminder that love endures, truth prevails, and hope never fades, because even in the darkest moments, justice will find its way.
Suffolk County District Attorney Ray Tierney's office led the prosecution.
Do you believe that this is the end of this case, or are there more victims potentially that could still be out there?
Well, it doesn't matter what I believe. You know, this is certainly the end of this indictment. But unfortunately, we have a lot of unsolved cases. We have a lot of bodies that are still out there, you know, some on Gilgo Beach, some elsewhere. So whether or not this case is over, the work still remains.
And the murders to which Uhrman pleaded guilty span nearly 2 decades, guys, from 1993 to 2010. He faces 3 consecutive life sentences behind bars without the possibility of parole, plus another 100 years on top of that. So a little semblance of closure for the families there, guys.
Tom, thank you. All right, coming up, we will look at the popular but dangerous trend on social media. It's called tan maxing. We are going to talk to a dermatologist to see what the big deal is about and if it's healthy for you.
We welcome you back to CBS Mornings at 7:30, which around here only means one thing. Time to look at the stories that caught our eye. With us now is the lovely Adriana Diaz to do the honors. Good morning, Adriana.
Good morning to you all. So happy to be here. All right, so we're going to begin in Nevada, where boxing champ Floyd Mayweather Jr. is facing two felony charges. Prosecutors allege Mayweather wrote a check back in 2024 to the tune of $200,000 to purchase a high-end watch. The problem, they claim he knew he didn't have the funds to back it up. If convicted on the felony theft charge, he could face up to 20 years in prison and thousands of dollars in fines. Mayweather is also facing other financial issues, including owing more than $7 million in back taxes. Now, Mayweather's attorneys told ESPN that this matter does not belong in the criminal courts, and they say he looks forward to being vindicated through the court proceedings. He is coming out of retirement later this month to box in Greece. Moving on to Washington, D.C., President Trump's $14 million effort to clean up the iconic reflecting pool isn't going so great. This is what it looked like after it was repainted with what the president calls American flag blue. And this is what it turned into just days later when an algae bloom took over. The Department of Interior says the water is being treated with, quote, high-tech nanobubble ozone technology, whatever that is, and high-tech nanobubble ozone technology.
Wow.
And hydrogen peroxide.
There you go.
Okay, you guys have got to see this video. This is a heart-pounding video of a Coast Guard rescue in Maryland. Take a look at this. That white boat that you see there spiraled out of control after the man driving it was thrown overboard while the engine was still running. So the Coast Guard in the red boat chased after it to try to stop it in a maneuver that might make Tom Cruise envious. An officer leaps from one boat to the other to regain control. Look at him go.
Yes.
Switching off the motor. Luckily, no injuries were reported, but that looks incredible.
That does look like a movie.
It looks like a movie. Tom Cruise is taking notes for the next Mission Impossible.
There you go.
Okay, so finally, Boston, the legendary home of Cheers. Well, they've run out of beer, and it's all Scotland's fault. Let's explain. Thousands of Scottish soccer fans flooded the city for the World Cup and partied so hard that it tapped out many bar supplies. So this was the scene at many watering holes across Beantown as Scotland beat Haiti over the weekend. There are even reports that the Sam Adams tap room ran dry. Hopefully Boston will stock up again and quickly because Scotland is set to face off against Morocco on Friday. And by the way, guys, one bar owner told the Boston Globe that the demand tripled what they normally see for St. Patrick's Day. And we're talking about Boston with all the Irish. Nora, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes, Nora O'Donnell.
Exactly.
Well, you know soccer makes you thirsty, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Pride makes you thirsty. Pride.
Wait, wait. Irish people like to drink or something?
Oh, not at all.
Oh, that's amazing. Adriana, thank you so much. All right, sticking with the World Cup, we are seeing more history from Argentina's Lionel Messi. Last night, he became the first man to play in six World Cups. And he scored three goals to lead the defending champs over Algeria in their opening match. Messi now has 16 World Cup goals, tied for the most all time. Carter Evans has been following all of the action for us, and he is kicking it with us right now from Los Angeles.
All right, Nate, take a look. The giant Messi mural behind me here in downtown LA. The GOAT marked his record sixth World Cup campaign with a historic performance exactly 20 years after his World Cup debut. More than 70,000 fans packed Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City to see one of soccer's greatest players on the world's biggest stage.
Lionel Messi!
Lionel Messi showed at nearly 39 years of age, he's still got magic in his feet.
The rebound is Messi's second goal!
His sensational hat trick led defending champions and three-time World Cup winners Argentina to victory over Algeria.
Lionel Messi!
And helped Messi tie the record for most men's World Cup goals, 16, further cementing the forward's place among the very best to ever play the game. Messi called the feat an honor, but said at the end of the day, it's just a statistic and nothing more. Norwegian goal machine Erling Haaland did what he always does, put the ball in the back of the net. The striker's two goals against Iraq set the stage for Norway's first World Cup win in 28 years. And earlier in the day, Kylian Mbappe in top-ranked France proved a point during a frenetic second half against Senegal. Displaying his trademark speed and flair for the dramatic, he scored a pair of goals, sealing France's 3-1 win.
Kylian President.
French fans felt the glee of watching their hero back at his best and hope he can lead the World Cup favorites to their third trophy.
Up next, Portugal, led by 41-year-old all-time great Cristiano Ronaldo. They're going to kick off its World Cup campaign in Houston today. And then England is going to begin its quest for its first World Cup trophy since 1966, and I know you all will be watching.
Just heating up.
I'm so fascinated by
Carter, thank you.
I'm so fascinated by Lionel Messi, though. I would like to at least see him in person play one time.
Agreed. I think it's the sixth World Cup.
Yes.
Some people consider him the best of all time.
I know.
And that's what I love about the World Cup. It's a reminder that these players are so massively popular around the world.
Yeah.
Like, we have some superstars.
Right.
But some that are going to be on this show later.
Yeah, you're right about that. Soccer has megastars,
that's for sure.
That's right. Okay, well, in this morning's Health Watch, the tan maxing trend is getting a lot of attention on social media. Tan maxing is where people maximize their exposure to the sun for the darkest possible tans. Dr. Rachel Nazarian is a board-certified dermatologist. Good morning to you, doctor. It's great to have you here. What is tan maxing? Who's doing it? And what concerns you the most about it?
Okay, so Gen Zers are on this trend. And it's basically kind of what you said. It's maxing out your tan. It's making it look dramatic, going into tanning beds, trying to get a dark tan, show off the tan lines, and even burning.
Okay.
And it is very dangerous.
Well, for skin cancer, moving forward, and some diseases that we're looking at, but is any amount of the sun okay? I mean, you ask anyone under the age of like 18 to 35, and they could tell you the UV index right now. It's very trendy.
Right.
So is a little bit of sun okay?
Listen, we like it for mental health. It's nice to be outdoors. You know, I don't want to scare people to that extent, but there's a way to do it safely. Do it early in the morning, do it later when the sun isn't as intense, and do it with sunscreen on.
Yeah, as you can see, I'm just here for moral support. I'm already maxed out when it comes to my tan.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, there's a lot of misinformation about sunscreen and also tanning beds. Like, what can you dispel?
Well, I can tell you that a tanning bed gives you 10 to 15 times the amount of UVA that you get in midday sun. It's incredibly dangerous, and it ages the skin. Forget the skin cancer, which doesn't seem to be scaring anybody these days, but it's also aging the skin. So Allergan Aesthetics did research that found that most people wanted like healthy-looking skin, small pores, good, you know, elasticity, no wrinkles. But then they're all doing this type of, you know, behavior that actually does the exact opposite.
And they're not looking far enough into the future. Can this damage be reversed by any cosmetic procedure or lasers?
Some. It's a really, really good question. I mean, some of it can be reversed. Like, you can pay a lot of money to help build more collagen and help elasticity. But you cannot reverse what the radiation is doing. The skin never forgets that. And you don't get punished until decades later, which I think is part of the problem.
So what's your biggest piece of advice as we are in the heart of the summer and the weather is getting hotter in places around the world?
My advice is this. Like, first, have trust in the science. I think we've lost that a little bit, too. And there was research that also found that most people are getting their information from TikTok and Instagram. So remember where your misinformation is coming from. I mean, I wish that dermatologists did a better job of actually getting on social media, because that's the new battlefield. If we know people are getting their information there, we need to actually be part of that conversation. And I think maybe we've missed that a little bit. And lastly, I think it's important to, like, make sure the carrot at the end of the stick is the right thing. Like I said, cancer is not scaring people, but maybe wrinkles and loss of elasticity will.
That's a great point. Always coming with the valuable information.
Great tactic. I hope to see you more on social media.
I'm going to try. Yes.
All right, Dr. Rachel Nazarian, we appreciate you. Ahead, the one and only Jalen Brunson is here. The champ also brought along his coach, also known as Dad.
So special.
Stick around.
Points. You know, life is not perfect, but there are perfect moments, and there's one right there.
Welcome back to CBS Mornings. That's New York Knicks superstar, and I mean superstar, Jalen Brunson hugging his dad and assistant coach Rick Brunson after winning the NBA title. They are the first father-son duo to win a championship as a player and a coach for the same team. Brunson scored 45 points in the game, clinching 7-game win. A Knicks record. for a finals game, and he was named finals MVP. Jalen and Rick Brunson join us now. Good morning, fellas, and congratulations.
Yeah. Keep talking with those stats, Nate.
It never gets old. Jalen, I want to start with you. After that final buzzer rang and you had that moment to take a breath, the first person that you hugged was your father. What was that moment like?
Second person. I hugged, said what's up to Coach Johnson from the Spurs first, just to show respect.
Just the fact that you did that. Before you did anything, you went over. I thought the grace in that moment shows how well he was raised and the type of person you are. Why did you do that? I love that.
It was just kind of instinct. I guess like kind of how I was raised. I think win or loss, it was going to show respect regardless of the outcome. And got a lot of respect for them over there. And once I saw him, it was emotional from that point on. But it was a crazy moment.
You know, when you were being asked about your father, you tipped your hat low and you said, "I don't have words." I'm asking you right now to find the words, not just to describe your relationship with your father, you're also your mother. Because I look at these sports that we love like a woman we fall in love with, and you chased her. They helped you court her. Yeah. They gave you the opportunity to fall in love with her. Yeah. They made sacrifices for you to be with her. Thinking about all of that and where you are now, what comes to mind?
Just like the beginning. Everyone sees the videos of me and him in the park. And him like yelling at me, getting on me, but no one saw the conversations like after the fact or before, saying, "Is this what you want to do for a living?" The answer was always yes. So everyone thinks that he just kind of forced basketball upon me, but it was something that I chose to do, and he knew he had the study guide, he had the blueprint, he did it before, so it was clear as day to listen to him. Every so often.
Jalen, I like what he said. I am the study guy. I remember, Nate, when you did that piece at your house, I fell in love with your wife. I fell in love, the whole family unit. Your sister, I thought you guys are very special. Can we show that video?
Concentrate, Jay, concentrate.
Follow through. Everything you do has to be legit. Habits. It's not fast enough. No follow through, not fast enough. Tiredness for the weak. Mentally strong. Go.
I know, Rick, when you look at that, you go, tiredness for the weak. I go, you're so tough on him. you were instilling more than just basketball. Tell me about your philosophy, what you were thinking when he was a little kid.
Well, I just believe basketball kind of parallels to life. You know, just working hard on the court, building habits.
Yeah.
You know, how you raised and things you do kind of parallel to life. So this is an opportunity to, get him better. And he wanted to get better. We worked every day. But the credit goes to him. I just did all the yelling.
You know, we were talking about that clip before the show. And yes. Gail asked me, she said, "Do you have to push your kids that hard?" And she was asking me as a father as well.
Yes.
I said, a kid can be good, you know, if he finds some intrinsic motivation. But he can't be great if he's not pushed by a parent or a coach or has that self-motivation. Like, you have to be fanatically in love with the game and be pushed to your extremes in order to be great. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. The way he kind of, they did everything, like you said, they kind of parallel life, basketball parallel life. Like, what I did on the court, I did in the classroom. It was really simple. But it was a choice that you had to make. Is it something that you actually want to do? But they made the choice easy because all the things they sacrificed for me, and I understand how much I love the game. And it was easy from that point on.
Jalen, you were really fascinating to me to watch. Someone close to you said, he has just resting bitch face. And it's just, when I watch him, you scare a lot of people. His composure. You always seem so focused, so poised.
So steady.
And so steady and so calm under pressure. What is your leadership style, and where did it come from? Did it come from your dad?
It came from my mom.
From your mom?
My mom. It came from both of them. I feel like they did a good job of kind of piggyback off each other. Like, dad was, obviously you saw it, he was vocal, pushing me and everything. But I didn't know the conversation that they had behind the scenes about how they can still kind of loved me and still pushed me at the same time by still being hard on me. But it was both of them.
Well, you never seemed to lose it. Like, I remember when Wimby pushed you, it was such a blatant foul. And you looked at him for just a second, but you just walked away. In that moment, it just seems instinctually you just want to say, wait a second, and go after him. But that's not what you do. That's not how you play this game.
It was definitely a spur of the moment thing, but I think no matter what, you got to understand the moment and what you're doing and what's your main goal and focus. And I just knew that no matter what, I've always had the ability to kind of stay even keeled. Yeah. Never too high, never too low. And that's a credit to them.
Yeah, I see what you did there. Spur of the moment. Okay. But Rick, let me ask you this, because the question now for a lot of people that love the NBA, love New York, is Jalen Brunson the greatest New York Knick ever? And I know you talked about it a little bit, and you're a humble hero. You never talk about yourself. You don't like it when people talk about you, so I'm not even going to direct this question towards you. Who do you believe is the greatest Knick ever, and what does he have to do to be considered that?
I would say, Patrick Ewing, obviously, is eyewitness, is the greatest right now. All-time leading rebounder, points.
Yeah,
all the stats. But just the type of person Pat was, type of teammate he was, the work ethic are similar. Mm-hmm. Pat was the hardest working guy we had, and he was the best player. But Pat did it for 15 years in New York. Jalen did it for 4. Mm. So to me, I don't rank these players by championships, although it's great. Pat's always been a champion in my book. So right now, another 7 years, you can revisit that question. But as of today, big fella is my favorite.
Mm. Father's Day is Sunday. I think you guys have already had the best present of all for both of you.
My birthday was the day after the championship.
Oh, it was?
Happy belated, man.
Happy belated. Yeah. Have you all watched the game? Did either of you watch the game after just to look at it?
I mean, I did. I watched it.
I watched a little bit.
You did?
A little bit. I was skimming through a little bit.
And what are you looking for when you're looking at it after? You know you won. You know how it's going to turn out. What are you looking for?
I like listening to what's being said.
Oh, okay.
Hearing the insights and everything. I think that's what I'm truly listening for at that point. Because like you said, you already know what's going on. There's no reason to really watch film at this point, but just listening.
One of the best moments was when the game was over, one of the games, and Charles Barkley, who I adore, said, what happened that first half? And Jalen just goes, I don't know, Chuck.
Yeah.
I don't know, Chuck.
They definitely know how to close out just like this man with the basketball in his hand. I just want to say thank you for being here. I know you guys have a lot going on. Mm. We appreciate you pulling up. Congratulations to both of you. This is a special moment. I love what you guys have, not just as a father and son duo, but also as a family. Give it up for Jalen Brunson and Rick Brunson. Yeah.
Just a moment. We are very happy to say that Duran Bernard has brought his full self live and in color here in the studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Mr. Bernard, because can you just say your opening line when you got up on the stage? What did you say?
Happy Black History Month for the rest of my life.
And then you said, thank you.
Thank you for the Grammy.
Yes, that's the line I was looking for.
Yes.
Can we please at some point show the video of you running up to the stage? Because
absolutely.
Before you even, look at you.
I love it.
Now I said,
it's the scoot.
Now I said, is he just being extra or is that his personality?
Oh no, that's me all day.
What were you thinking when you were running up there?
Please don't fall. These were open back mule shoes. I'm trying to my toes
crunch
was doing
toes.
This, yes, so that they're, yes, no, we was good.
But take us back what that moment meant to you and what it took for you to get from there to the Grammy stage.
Oh, gosh.
Duran.
where do we begin? My ether of the Grammy started in 2015, doing background for the Internet's Ego Death album, which was also nominated for a Grammy. And then following that, we did Bubba for K. Trinata.
But then you end up on the Grammy stage. We have to fast forward.
Yes, yes.
So take us to that moment. You're up there and you're going, thank you for the Grammy. What that meant to you in that moment?
It was just a surreal moment because it's been 20 years since I've been doing all of this. And the fact that my parents were there to be able to share that moment, that was really the foundation of everything. Everything else has been ornamental.
It's so special to see that, I think, for everybody. And then leading into Father's Day, I keep thinking of your new album named Bernard.
Mm-hmm. Period.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tribute to your dad.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
My father is an audio engineer. I'm an audio engineer's son. he's played a very big part in just how I approach music, how it feels. All
is
of
his name Bernard?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm a junior.
Okay.
You're a junior.
yes, okay. Yes. And between him and my mom, just they've been investing in me. It's always been a musical household. Music took me serious before I took it serious.
Oh, yeah.
So, but 16 was when my pops took me on the road with Earth, Wind & Fire as production assistant. Mm. And that's when I was able to be in the things. And he asked me, is this what you want to do? And I said, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
What advice would you give to your younger self? Let's go back a couple of decades. What would you whisper into your ear about this journey, the highs and the lows that you're about to go on?
I would just say start collaborating with other people a little bit sooner. Mm. Like, stop trying to do everything by yourself. Because I feel like that's what kind of prolonged this is. Mm-hmm. I was so, I'm gonna do this by myself. I'm in my room, I'm writing. And it's like, once I started bringing other people in that had just as much of imagination as I did, mm-hmm. that's when things started really happening.
Who's
that's
your great next dream collab?
Yes.
Who's your next dream collab?
I mean, Kendrick and Rihanna. Let's just do
just
that.
Just name it, just name it.
K-Dot and Riri.
Hey, B.
I like
hey.
It. Durant, I like in less than 30 seconds, one of the tracks is, Am I Okay? How would you say that sentence for yourself? Durant Bernard is what?
Durant Bernard is, oof, on fire.
Ah.
Yes.
I know that's right.
Yes.
Congratulations to you. Congratulations. This album, Bernard, is out. Too bad he's so shy. He's out right now. Cheering you on, Bernard. You and your dad. That'll do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow on CBS Mornings, your favorite morning show. I said it.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Beth and Rip are back in Dutton Ranch.
This life here is gonna work, isn't it?
We'll make it work.
Starring Kelly Riley.
A legacy is a beautiful thing, but only if it survives.
Cole Hauser.
Let's go to work.
Ed Harris.
Family is the only thing worth fighting for.
And Annette Bening.
I can make this a lot harder for all y'all.
And peace will have to wait.
Dutton Ranch, new series now streaming on Paramount Plus.